It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Governor Evers has proposed legalizing medical marijuana and decriminalizing possession in small amounts, but top Republicans oppose those ideas. We'll ask you to call in with your thoughts on whether pot should be legal here in Wisconsin. First, when you go out for breakfast and glance at the menu, do you tend to look for something with bacon? You find something that looks really good, but decide you want a few extra strips, so when it comes time to order, maybe you sound a bit like Homer Simpson.
I'll have the smiley face breakfast special. But could you add a bacon nose, plus bacon hair, bacon mustache, 5 o'clock shadow made of bacon bits, and a bacon body?
How about if I just shoved a pig down your throat? I'm kidding.
A 2017 survey by National Today shows that 21% of Americans said if they could, they'd eat bacon every day for the rest of their lives. 16% said they couldn't live without bacon. 18% said bacon is their favorite food. Only 4% said they don't like bacon. In this week's edition of Food Friday, we're going to talk about why we love bacon so much and share some ideas on what to do with it. Eliza Cross writes about food, cooking, and other lifestyle topics. She's the author of several books, including 101 Things to Do with Bacon, 101 More Things to Do with Bacon, and Bacon, Beans, and Beer. Eliza, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's great to be here. I love that Homer Simpson clip.
It really nails it, doesn't it? Well, Eliza, just from the book titles, I'm going to make an educated guess. You kind of like bacon.
I absolutely love bacon. If I could, I would eat it every day. Day as well.
And why is it that we humans, so many of we humans, really have this thing for bacon? It really does stand out for a lot of people.
I think on a just simple basis, we love the aroma of bacon. When it's cooking, it smells like home. It smells like being in your mom's kitchen with good smells. Bacon has a crunchy texture. It's just a joy to eat. And there are actually scientific reasons why we like bacon as well.
What are those?
A researcher at America's Test Kitchen actually went deep into bacon to find out why it's so appealing. The cell membranes of the muscle tissue contain fatty acids. This doesn't sound real appealing, but they disintegrate when they're cooking to yield that bouquet of flavorful compounds that we love. Some of these compounds have sweet, nutty, caramel notes. Others have more grassy notes. And others are that buttery flavor that seems to be a big key to loving bacon. And of course, it's got that savory taste too, that umami that's so appealing.
Let's get into some of the basics of frying up some bacon, because there can be downsides. You get splattering sometimes, uneven cooking. I've had it, you know, where it's, you know, a little soft over here, a little charcoaly over there. What to you is the key to cooking it well and hopefully tidily?
My favorite way to cook bacon is to set the oven at a lower temperature, maybe 275. Line a cookie sheet with foil, and then you simply lay the bacon on the foil, leave a little space between each strip, and put it in the oven. Depending on how thick it is, it might take 15 to 25 minutes to cook. You can kind of pull it out once in a while and check it and flip it, but it will cook evenly, and then you can just wad up that foil and throw it away when you're done.
Yeah, I heard about oven cooking bacon a few years back, and it really is a game changer. I feel like my bacon comes out a lot more consistent, and there's a lot less mess. Is that what you found too?
Yes, it is. It keeps it nice and flat, and it's perfect if you're a little bit lazy in the morning like I am, because you don't have to fuss with it. You can just put it in the oven, drink your coffee, and wait for your perfect bacon to cook.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Eliza Cross about bacon. She's the author of several books, including a few about bacon, including Bacon, Beans, and Beer. Eliza, you mentioned making it in the morning. I know you've got recipes for every time of day, but what are some of your favorite breakfast or brunch combos involving bacon?
One of my favorites that might be really good for all of you tomorrow when the snowstorm moves in is a Dutch baby with bacon. And you can put apple in that, but that's a pancake that is made with an egg batter. You pop it in the oven It puffs up and looks so beautiful. And then you can drizzle it with maple syrup when you're done.
Ooh, so a baked pancake and then with the baked bacon. And actually, there is something magical about syrup, maple syrup hitting the bacon.
It's a wonderful combination. It's almost like those two flavors were made to go together. And if you like a more savory taste, you can do a burrito and put bacon in it. Maybe scramble some eggs, do a little potato, cook your bacon and drain and crumble it and put that inside. You could smother it with green chili, maybe a little Wisconsin cheese on top. So that's perfect if you're more of a savory person than a sweet person.
And here's another one that's in the same neighborhood, a good breakfast dish. You shared a couple recipes with us. We've got it at WPR.org/Food Friday. One of them is Asiago Bacon Mini Frittatas. Talk us through this one.
This is a great recipe if you're hosting brunch because you can make these little frittatas ahead of time. They're egg-based, so they kind of have that omelet flavor. The Asiago cheese gives it a really nice nutty flavor that pairs really well with the bacon. You can make those ahead of time and then just heat them up before everybody comes over if you're hosting breakfast.
Now, we asked our listeners to share their bacon thoughts. Tim on the Ideas Network Facebook page writes, he likes BLTs with locally smoked bacon and vine-ripened tomatoes. Now, the BLT is a classic. Do you have thoughts on how to make the best possible bacon, lettuce, tomato?
I agree with Tim that using garden-ripe tomatoes is where it's at. That's the key to a really great BLT. I like to cook the bacon so that it's nice and crispy so that when you bite it, it crunches and breaks off. So you don't have that awkward, have you ever bitten into a BLT where you're kind of struggling?
Gnaw through.
And, yeah. Yes, I hate gnawing.
Hope I'm not grossing people out there, but yes, I have been there.
And then nice crispy lettuce, good mayonnaise like Hellman's. You've got to have real mayonnaise when you're making a BLT and some beautiful, crispy, toasted bread. I wish I had one right now.
That sounds great. And, you know, that Tim mentioned locally smoked bacon. Do you, sometimes we'll just take whatever bacon is available, but if you're looking at different kinds of bacon, different, cuts or varieties, what kind of things do we consider there?
I love bacon that is handcrafted, smoked, maybe over cherry wood or hardwood. I love bacon producers that are good to their animals. I think that reflects in the taste and everything that they do. And I love lean bacon. You can definitely look for that at your favorite market, and definitely locally sourced is always the best.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The question I have real briefly is, I have not been able to microwave bacon and still have it taste as well as either putting it in the oven or frying it up. Is there any secret to microwaving it to get a better taste, or is it just don't even try? Thanks so much.
You bet. And I do occasionally microwave bacon. If you're in a hurry, it's a great way to go. It's not my favorite cooking method because it does tend to dry out the bacon a little bit. If you're making bacon crumbles to go on deviled eggs or something like that, you can definitely use the microwave. So here's a couple of keys. I think it's important to layer the plate with about 4 or 5 layers of paper towels. You need that big, heavy cushion to absorb a lot of the fat. Lay the strips, don't overlap them. Cover with 1 paper towel, and then cook it at 50% power. It will take a little bit longer, but that way it won't just nuke it. It will cook it more slowly, and I think you'll be happier with it.
All right. Good luck, Charlie. We're talking about cooking with bacon on this edition of Food Friday. Eliza Cross is with us. She writes about food, cooking, and other lifestyle topics, and she's the author of books including 101 Things to Do with Bacon and Bacon, Beans, and Beer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite bacon-inclusive recipe? What do you like to make or serve with bacon? How do you cook it? Do you have questions about how to cook with bacon or how to use it in different kind of dishes, not just breakfast, but meals, entrees, dinners, desserts? And have you experimented, have you tried turkey bacon or vegetarian bacon substitutes? How have you done with that? Do you like those? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and find a couple recipes from Eliza at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time.
Every morning, I wake up and I smoke a cigarette, and then I eat 5 strips of bacon. And for lunch, I eat a bacon sandwich, and for a midday snack,
bacon.
Bacon, a whole bacon. Damn plate.
Burgess Meredith there in Crumpier Old Men, introducing our Food Friday topic for today. We're talking about bacon. Rob Ferret here on the Ideas Network. It's Food Friday. Eliza Cross is with us with lots of advice and recipes on how to cook with bacon. She's the author of books including 101 Things to Do with Bacon and Bacon, Beans, and Beer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan? What kind of things do you like to include bacon in when you're cooking? Do you have questions about what to do with it? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'll go back to your calls now. Roy is with us in Platteville. Roy, hi.
How you doing?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about?
Well, I go to the butcher shop and get side pork, and I season it myself. I've never cooked it in the oven. I was wondering if we got any experience there.
Side pork, and is that an cured or uncured, Roy?
I think it's uncured bacon.
Okay. All right. Have you worked with this, Eliza?
I personally have not, but I think that would be a fun experiment. I don't see why it wouldn't be fantastic cooked in the oven. Are you going to put it in a cure and make your own bacon from it?
No, I just cook it like, but I put pepper and I use a spice called Wundomus, and I put it on this and just fry it in a pan, but I've never done it in the oven.
Interesting. Boy, okay.
That sounds good.
Yeah, good luck. Give it a try in the oven. I can't see how terribly bad it could go. I imagine if you cook it like bacon on a pan, it would work in the oven, too. Are people, Eliza, curing their own bacon a lot? It seems like the sort of a home artisan type project I could see people getting into.
I have not personally done this, but I have seen recipes, and it does look like a great way not only to make your own product, which is always fun, but also to control the additives, make a little bit more healthy product.
Thanks a lot for that call, Roy. We'll go to Joe with us in La Crosse. Joe, hello.
Hello. So my question is, I eat a lot of fried bacon, and I was always taught to save the bacon grease. And then we can use it for, you know, oiling up the pan for steaks or hamburgers or something like that. So I was wondering if you had any other ideas for how I could apply bacon grease.
Yeah, you save your bacon grease, as do I, Eliza. What kind of things do you do with it?
I love saving the bacon grease, and that's such a great question. I'm really glad you asked that. If you strain it when it's still hot and get most of the particles out of it, you actually get a product that can last for a long time. I keep it in the refrigerator so that it lasts longer. You can use it for cooking. I actually have a peanut butter cookie recipe that calls for part butter and part bacon grease. The combination of those two flavors with the peanut butter is extraordinary.
Wow.
You can also use it in cookies like ginger cookies, spice cookies. It pairs really nicely. Anything that you're cooking, like fried rice, would be really good with a spoonful of bacon grease. I'm a huge fan of using it for cooking. That's great.
Thanks for that call, Joe. And my favorite thing I've ever done with leftover bacon grease is I had some leftover squash that I'd cooked a while back, fried that up in there, then fried a fried egg, and what was left, put it on top of the squash, sprinkle a little cheese on it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So bacon fat and squash, I recommend highly. Just, you know, wait 5 months for that squash to be ready. Actually, before we go back to our callers, Eliza, you've shared another recipe with us I want to check out. This one is beer, bacon, mac, and cheese. That sounds like a good Wisconsin dish. Tell us about this one.
The combination of bacon with macaroni and cheese is so good. It enhances the creaminess of the macaroni and cheese. Macaroni and cheese can be quite rich. If you crumple some bacon and put it in there, it actually adds a really nice contrast to that creamy richness. Adding some beer to the cooking water when you're making the pasta adds another flavor element, that kind of earthy, bubbly element. And those three things together make an unbeatable combination.
You can find that recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. Eliza Cross is with us, author of 101 Things to Do with Bacon. We're talking about bacon on this edition of Food Friday. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Bloomer. Mark, hi. Mark, are you there? Mark's gone. We'll go to Deborah in Brown Deer instead. Deborah, hello.
Hi. Well, I wanted to ask if your guests had heard of Newskies, but also I just remembered when I lived on a sailboat many years ago in Florida, my friend wanted to make a dish, and we went all over the place looking for these mushrooms, and you brown onions, and then you add the mushrooms, and then sour cream and bacon. Oh, no, you do the bacon first. I'm sorry. Bacon,
yeah.
And onions, and I'm sure every ingredient would have to be perfect. Like, you like real mayonnaise, which I agree with. Vidalia onions would be great, but it really is good. It sounds greasy, but bacon is greasy by nature. But Newskies, have you ever heard of it? It's in Wittenberg.
Yeah, that's here in Wisconsin, Eliza, yeah.
I am so familiar with Newskies. It's one of my favorite bacons. If you want to be the most popular person in your family, like I was a few years ago, send your relatives Newskies for Christmas. They do wonderful mail order, and boy, was that a hit. I'm still hearing about that.
Deborah, thanks so much. And this is a common thing, I'll tell you, Eliza, for Wisconsinites to send to people who have moved out of Wisconsin. Probably up there with, you know, beer or cheese or whatever. Yeah, that bacon, I think it's sent a lot from here. Thanks for that call, Deborah. We'll go now to Mark in Onalaska. Mark, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what'd you want to tell us about?
You know, I was I've been a chef for a long time, and every once in a while people, they try to get health conscious, and I don't feel like bacon is something where you should try to be healthy, but I have never had great luck with, like, turkey bacon, or there's soy products. But, you know, one of the things, and I know this is probably cheating, and it's not really technically non-pork bacon, but if you take a little bit of that bacon grease and you use it on some of the turkey bacon, it makes it a little bit, I don't know, palatable, I guess.
Gotcha.
If you absolutely have to try something like that, I don't know. I just thought I'd share that.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. No, I've had
great
turkey bacon that other people have made and liked it. My problem is the line between still undercooked and charcoal is really thin for me. So I have a really hard time making it just right. Have you tried working with turkey bacon much, Eliza?
I am not a fan of what I call fakin', because I tend to believe in moderation in all things. So I don't quite see the point of turkey bacon. I do understand vegan bacon and totally respect people who want to eat vegan and still miss that flavor. I think there's a place for that. But turkey bacon, I kind of love the idea of basting it with bacon grease. It kind of seems like it might cancel out some of the healthiness, but
probably so.
Have to try that.
Thanks a lot for that call. I wanted to ask, Eliza, you've got in your cookbooks desserts, a fair amount of them, with bacon in them. What are some of your favorite ways? And we talked a little bit about bacon fat in cookies earlier, but how about actual bacon in dessert making?
First, I have to confess that my publisher asked me to include some dessert recipes, and I was resistant at first. I wasn't sure about combining something savory with bacon in a sweet recipe. But I had a lot of fun testing and experimenting. One of my favorite recipes that's very popular is a chocolate glazed bacon brownie. And the brownies are nice and fudgy. They have crunchy bacon that you add right before cooking and then put a nice chocolate ganache glaze on top. It's that sweet, salty, smooth, crunchy, just a flavor explosion when you eat them.
Let's bring on one more caller. Todd is with us in Janesville. Todd, hello.
Hi, just a comment for the deer hunters out there. When you take your deer in to get processed, some of the lager plants will make venison bacon. They mix a little bit of pork with your venison.
Huh.
And Holes is over in New Glarus does a really good job with putting a little maple syrup in there, and it's incredible. Just kind of change up your deer processing for the year.
Interesting, Todd. Thanks. I've had venison sausage and jerky, but never bacon. And it's a combo, he says, with some pork mixed in. Have you heard of people doing this, Eliza, with deer or other non-pig meats?
No, and I am learning so much from your callers. This is great. I can't wait to try venison bacon.
Yeah, we got a lot of unique Wisconsin twists up here. So anything that you're kind of pushing the edge, pushing the envelope on, Eliza, as we wrap up expanding the frontiers of baconology?
Well, the comedian Jim Gaffigan says that bacon is so good that when they want to make other foods taste better, they wrap them in bacon. I think it's fun to experiment with different things and try wrapping different foods in bacon. I love, for instance, going to a party. I bring a specialty that I call meat-wrapped meat, which is bacon wrapped around little smokies or bacon wrapped around meatballs. You can wrap your Thanksgiving turkey in bacon. I think the sky's the limit.
And you have no shortage of party invitations, I'm guessing.
Whenever I'm invited to a party, if I don't bring a bacon appetizer, people are very disappointed.
Eliza, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
As Eliza Cross, she writes about food, among other things. Her books include 101 Things to Do with Bacon, 101 More Things to Do with Bacon, and Bacon, Beans, and Beer. We've got 16 tips from Eliza on how to cook and store bacon, what to do with the bacon grease, and more at WPR.org/Food Friday, plus two recipes that we talked about, beer, bacon, mac and cheese, and Asiago bacon mini frittatas. We want to hear what you think about legalizing marijuana at 800-642-1234. Do you think it should be legal here in the state? Should legalization be limited to medical marijuana, or do you think permitting recreational use is a good idea too? How would you like to see pot regulated if it were legal? If you don't support legislation or legalization, let us know why. If you have made up your mind, what could sway you one way or the other? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. This issue is in the news here in Wisconsin at the state capitol lately. In February, Governor Tony Evers said he wanted to legalize medicinal marijuana and small amounts of pot for personal use.
I believe, and I know the people of Wisconsin overwhelmingly believe, that people shouldn't be treated like criminals for accessing medicine that can change or maybe even save their lives.
Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee say they won't be including that in the upcoming state budget. Senator John Nygren says it's something that belongs in a standalone bill, while committee co-chair Alberta Darling called the governor's proposal off the wall scary, quote unquote. We've heard from some of you on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So many military veterans, says Shirley, say it's the key to helping with their PTSD, yet every provider at the VA has a handout on their desk warning of the dangers of it. Shirley goes on, meanwhile, the drugs like hydrocodone aren't tough to get. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What should the status of marijuana be here in Wisconsin? Legal, legal for medicinal use, completely illegal, you name it. 800-642-1234. We also heard from Neil on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Neil says national legalization would resolve many issues. If Wisconsin residents were in areas where medical weed wasn't legal, they would have to choose going without while traveling or break the law for medical relief. Uniformity could also be eco-friendly for growing. Let's go to your calls now. Brad is with us in Saukville. Brad, hi.
How you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Complete legalization, 100% recreational and medicinal. I mean, at the end of the day, my mom's got stage 4 breast and bone cancer. She has basically been, I hate to say it, due to pharmaceutical prices and everything, she's basically been cost out of house and home. I mean, when your medication is about $1,200 a month and you're living on disability, how do you make things work other than saying, well, you can either choose homelessness or you can, you know, just deal with it? And then at the end of the day, one question I always ask people is, if you had to make a choice, and I mean had to, not saying either is a, I guess you could say, a desirable situation, but if it's 2 a.m, you're on the highway, who would you rather have driving next to you on the highway? Some guy who's plastered, 15 shots of tequila in, swerving between the 3 lanes of highway? Or would you rather be next to the guy who's a little bit more cautious and a little bit more paranoid?
Brad, thanks a lot for getting us started at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Larry with us in Stevens Point. Larry, hi.
Hello.
Hi. What do you think about this, Larry?
Well, number one, I think they should legalize marijuana. It would help the state in many different ways. It would cut down a lot on people being in jail. It would cut. It just do so much terror to the drug cartels. Everything. It would just help so much.
All right, Larry, thanks a lot. We are taking your calls on the idea of marijuana legalization here in Wisconsin and want to know what you think. Complete legalization for medicinal purposes only or not at all? And if you have thoughts about how it should work, if it is legalized, let us know. 800-642-1234. The governor in his budget plan calls for medicinal marijuana legalization and decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana for personal use. Republican leaders in the legislature not on board at this point. Back to your calls now. Gray is with us in Milwaukee. Gray, hello.
Hi.
What do you think?
I think that it entirely needs to be legalized. I know a lot of people who use it for anxiety, depression, those sort of things. I think it's insane how you can travel 500 miles one way and it's completely legal, and you travel 500 miles the other way, and you could see jail time for that. And I just think that it's crazy how even alcohol is legalized, and I've seen people beat on their wife and kids because of alcohol, but weed is illegal, and, I mean, it makes people chill out, and that's about it. Like, I've never seen someone react badly or do something bad because they were affected by marijuana.
And, Gray, I want to ask, and I should probably ask more people, have you reached out to any, you know, government official, a state lawmaker, or anything on this issue?
No, but I definitely have been more encouraged to recently with Tony Evers being a big supporter, and I'm trying to get more into politics myself. So it's definitely something that I've been considering. And I think it's really important that even just having these sort of conversations, we let each other know in our community what we think about it.
Great. Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Richard in Cambridge. Richard, hi.
Howdy. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you think, Richard?
Well, to some extent, the previous caller mentioned one part of mine, and that is that both alcohol and cigarettes, which are proven killers, they have statistics every year on how many deaths were directly attributed to to alcohol and cigarette use. And either they have to go back and make that illegal, or just on that basis alone, marijuana in all forms, I think, should be legalized. Again, the medical effects that people talk about are wonderful. No kidding that obviously it should be controlled. I think that's the other part too. This way it's totally under control. Somebody else mentioned taking the power away from the cartels and the illegal factions. And I think for all those good reasons, I would vote to have it legalized.
Richard, thanks a lot for calling in. We're asking for your thoughts on the idea of legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin for medicinal use, for recreational use. How would you want to see it regulated if it were legalized? Do you not want to see it legalized in any way? Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Larry is with us in Rice Lake. Larry, hello.
Hello.
Hi, what did you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm all for the legalization of it. I think it's been around for a long time, and there's been a lot of users. I've used it back in the 60s and 70s quite often. But my comment with regard to this is that the other shoe to drop. It's 20, 30, 40 years down the road. What's going to happen? Look what happened with the cigarette tobacco, with inhaling smoke and what's going to happen with marijuana down the road if somebody associates it with a major lung problem. You know, we all have to pay for this damage that occurs by legalizing this stuff. And I guess I wouldn't like to see some major catastrophe. Again, I'm an ex-smoker. I'm an ex-marijuana user. But that doesn't mean that I'm not for legalizing it. I think it should be legalized just from a cost of society and law enforcement. But having said that, I am waiting for the other shoe to drop because of the medical ramifications that might occur from it 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Interesting. Gotcha, Larry. Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Nick on the line in Green Bay. Nick, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you think?
I was just calling because I do think there's a little bit of a bias in looking at who's speaking out for marijuana in the political spectrum and, you know, in the private conversations that we all have. You know, I think there's a lot of doctors and professionals and engineers and lawyers out there that are users and advocates of marijuana that maybe shy away from the public discourse because of the perception that might be associated with the marijuana use and the potential negative impact that perception could have on their career. So I hope that we consider that there might be a bias in seeing who's speaking out and advocating for this stuff.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call, Nick. We'll go now to Dustin with us in Spooner. Dustin, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I just wanted to call in because I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and I have experience with both the prescriptions that they prescribe to people with PTSD, and I have experience with smoking marijuana as well, and the effects of that it has on the nervous system for people with these type of disorders. And my experience is that marijuana is better than almost every prescription drug they have tried to give me for post-traumatic stress disorder. And I guess I'll just take my comments off the air.
All right, Dustin, thanks, and best to you as you deal with that PTSD. Thanks so much for sharing your story. Time for one more caller. Suzanne is with us now in Wisconsin Rapids. Suzanne, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I just want to say that I am in support of medical marijuana. As far as the recreation, I guess I have a little bit of a concern because my family and I, we were just in San Francisco, and the social aspect of it is a little difficult. I think that a lot of people aren't really necessarily thinking of. I have a 10-year-old child, and we're in the hotel that we're staying at, and we're, you know, playing foosball, my daughter and I, and, you know, these three young people come in, and they just lay out the marijuana. The whole place smells like a skunk. And then they start smoking, and I just felt like, you know, doesn't the hotel have certain policies about this? So my daughter, who's 10, is like, why does it smell so bad, and what's going on here? And so I think we just need to be a little bit careful about, you know, how we transition, if we're going to do this, how we transition and continue to educate children on, you know, moderation of everything or using things properly, wisely. You know, it can almost be a slippery slope.
Suzanne, thank you so much for wrapping us up there. Thanks for all of your calls. You can still let us know what you think about legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin. You can email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at @CentralTimeWPR. Well, Suzanne gives us a nice lead into our next conversation. Regardless of the legal status, marijuana is talked about in the news, in the media. It's advertised in states where it's legal. We get a little guidance on how to constructively talk with young people, with teens and kids about marijuana use that goes beyond the old just say no message. Stay with us here on Central Time. Does the phrase just say no ring a bell to you? What about DARE, as in dare to resist drugs and violence? How about this 1980s television ad?
Is there anyone out there who still isn't clear about what doing drugs does? Okay, last time. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
The sound of a sizzling egg there. Over the years, there have been various campaigns and education tactics aimed at steering the nation's children away from drugs. But we may have come to a new frontier now. With marijuana legalization a reality in many states and an ongoing conversation in others, how do we have the conversation about drugs with kids and young teens? Jennifer Grelman-Ani is the executive director and founder of Being Adept, a research and science-based nonprofit working to prevent alcohol and drug abuse among adolescents by empowering youth and parents to make informed choices. She's also a licensed marriage and family therapist specializing in adolescent and family psychotherapy. Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you, Rob.
Well, there's one approach that stuck around, it seems like, when it comes to drug education for a long time. I want to take a listen to another example now.
Not long ago in Oakland, California, I was asked by a group of children what to do if they were offered drugs. And I answered, just say no. Soon after that, those children in Oakland formed a Just Say No club. And now there are over 10,000 such clubs all over the country.
The late Nancy Reagan there. Jennifer, this, and I grew up with this in the 1980s, the egg ad
certainly.
And Nancy Reagan, just say no. We're changing our approach, it sounds like, to what actually works when it comes to talking to kids about drugs. What are you seeing?
Yeah, that's really true. You know, it's a whole new landscape now. Back in the 80s, it was this idea with the DARE program that you just talked about and the Nancy Reagan, just say no. Today, we prefer with our nonprofit to tell our kids, just say no, K-N-O-W. Because there's so much to know about these substances, and they've really changed. For example, you mentioned marijuana. That's a completely different psychoactive substance now than it was back in the 80s, with the THC content so much higher than they were then. So our approach, we have an evidence-based curriculum. That's really our contribution to this area of preventing drug and alcohol abuse among our kids. And with this curriculum, we have about five different lessons. It's designed specifically for middle school and for high school students. And, you know, we really give them direct, honest information. That's what we're doing at school. We bring in people that evidence really shows that you need to have people that are younger, that aren't teaching language arts. You really don't want to teach drug education. We bring in people that are college graduates and have some interest in teaching or psychology. And they're somewhat mentors to these kids, and we open up with, listen, we're here to give you really good information. It's information you're going to need. It's really important to learn about math and all the different academics you're learning about. But frankly, for life, when you go to high school, you're going to need to know a lot about substances and what exactly your value system is around it. So we encourage you to ask any questions you want to. It's certainly, our job isn't to tell you what to do. We're not here to say, just say no. We're here to help you make informed decisions. And, you know, kids have so much, it's so confusing for them now. I mean, you know, really, you talked about the landscape. We have billboards in our community, saying that you can get marijuana delivered to your door. I mean, that's a pretty different world than just say no and ignore it. Kids are critical thinkers. They want to know the real facts. They don't want to just be told, you know, sit down and be quiet. That's really not a style that works for them. So parents, as well as educators in school, really need to be open and educated about this topic so kids can ask them real questions and not just learn from sources that aren't reliable.
And I understand part of your focus is the effects of alcohol, marijuana, other drugs on their brain, on the adolescent brain when it's their age. What kind of things do you talk about?
Exactly right. Well, the first thing our kids learn is that the adolescent brain is such an important time in development for any human being. That is when they're learning about executive functioning. They're learning all these emotional regulations. So our kids learn that their brains aren't really developed until their late 20s. So really, it's a bad time to use drugs when your brain is developing. And they get the point, particularly in middle school when they're eager to to please their parents and so forth. They really get the point that this isn't something I really want to do. I kind of want to be in school and get good grades, and this isn't going to help me in terms of my motivation and things of that nature. So they get very educated about the process going on inside their brain. And we talk to our little sixth graders about, you know, what kind of brain do you want? I mean, do you want a brain that can operate and remember things and lead you through life and help you make those kinds of decisions you want to for your future? Or do you want to have a brain that's really been affected, you know, chemically by these substances? And they're eager to take our message on. You know, they really are at that point. It gets more challenging if you haven't talked to your kids by high school. That's a real uphill battle because you need to develop and get these conversations early on as parents with your children. So they're open and they come and talk to you about these different ideas.
Talking to Jennifer Grelman-Ani from Being Adept. She's the executive director and founder there, talking about how to talk to kids about drugs, how to have the drug conversation in an era where there's a lot of information and some places even advertising related to a lot of different drugs out there. Jennifer, how about the social side of things? It might be easy for a kid to say, yeah, I'll say no when they're in the classroom, and but maybe not having those tactics in a situation where drugs are present, maybe there's peer pressure. What kind of things do you focus on when it comes to that social angle?
Well, you know, there's two things we talk about. First, we talk about what peer pressure really is and what they learn. And what we know is that peer pressure isn't about some kid coming up to you and saying, hey, you better try this drug, you're not cool. It's internal. We have pressure when we feel internally that we have to fit in. So we help them really understand what is that feeling of peer pressure? Where is that coming from? So they know, you know, what's going on inside of them and with their thoughts and feeling pressured. We also... you know, one approach that parents take, I think, is really effective. What we tell our parents is, you know, you can say to your children, listen, you know, drugs are always going to be there. So is alcohol. It's always going to be there. If you want to try this stuff, you know, it's going to be there. You can try it at some point, I suppose, if that's what you decide to do. But now is a really bad time with all these things going on that you want to accomplish. So maybe you just want to wait. I mean, kids can they're much more comfortable with, you know, just wait a little bit than no. Because if you tell your child no, they usually want to do just the opposite thing. So it's really, and in terms of, you know, peer pressure, it's also talking to them about being in the moment. We have role plays in the classroom where they really decide, you know, how do I stand up for myself? How do I stand up for my own values? You know, some kids want to make a proclamation, no, I'm never using drugs, and you guys are crazy. Some kids would prefer to have an excuse, like, I have a sports event afterwards, I can't do that, or my mom drug tests me, she'll kill me. You know, something, but they need to be prepared. And we do talk to them about scenarios, whether it's, you know, if it's their first day in freshman high school and they're, you know, someone offers them a joint, what do they do? Or they want to go smoke, what are they going to do? So they need to think through this stuff because oftentimes perfectly good kids get involved with using drugs and they've never thought they'd become an addict. Not everyone that tries drugs is going to become an addict either, but the chances are it's just like Russian roulette. It's not really worth it. You just don't know.
And Jennifer,
that has to do with your family, you know, your family genealogy and so forth.
And what kind of responses, Jennifer, do you get from kids when you come in with this approach of teaching them information, not making judgment calls, not saying just don't do it? How do they react to that?
You know, I think because we use these instructors that are close to their age, they can relate to. They're quite in middle school. They're very open to it. I think they're pretty well inoculated when they leave middle school with our curriculum. And they usually we do a lot of pre and post surveys, so we find out what our kids are thinking. And they pretty much decided they're not going to use drugs for the next couple of years. I think it gets dicier in high school, but they're eager in middle school to get the information, to understand it. I mean, they're getting surrounded. There's so many kids now juuling, you know, over 4 million kids are juuling, this vaping of nicotine. They see this stuff, and sixth grade is a great time to start. They're already getting exposed to it. They're wondering about it. And they're usually very open to our message and somewhat relieved that it's honest. And we say, listen, we're here to, if you don't have the answer, we'll try to get it for you. Kids don't like hypocrisy. They want honesty. And if you can deal with them straight, you know, I think they appreciate that.
We'll leave it there for now. Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
That's Jennifer Grauman-Ani, Executive Director and founder of Being Adept, a research and science-based nonprofit that works to prevent alcohol and drug abuse among adolescents. They do it by trying to empower youth and parents to make informed choices. She's also a licensed marriage and family therapist specializing in adolescent and family psychotherapy. She joins to talk about how to talk about drugs with teens and pre-adolescents as drugs like marijuana become more normalized as they're legalized in some part around the country. And by the way, there's still time to join in our earlier conversation about whether marijuana should be legalized for medicinal purposes or recreationally. Share your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We have a link to a news article from our WPR news team, and you can share your thoughts while you're there. Are you looking for a unique vacation rental this summer? How about a giant potato in Idaho? An Airbnb near Boise has converted a giant novelty potato used by the Idaho Potato Commission into a cozy vacation home. It's not a real potato because nothing smells worse than potato going bad. So we wondered, what could Wisconsin do to match that? Natalie Guyette, producer, is here with me. You had an idea, Natalie.
Yeah, although I do kind of love the idea of the potato. It's very tacky. But the first thing that I thought of was the giant six-pack of beer that La Crosse is known for
right.
its roadside attraction. And roadside attractions in general, actually, would be kind of a fun thing to convert into Airbnbs, since Wisconsin has a bunch of weird, tacky ones.
Definitely. So the giant beer cans, you could actually have six different houses or rentals. Or I don't know, if you cut up into floors and you don't mind them being small, you could have more. Did you look at some other or think about some other roadside attractions?
Yeah, I pulled up a list. There's a few that would be good. We've got the giant pink elephant, Pinky the Elephant, in DeForest.
Okay.
That has potential. Also, the world's largest fish in Hayward.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would
that
be perfect.
That could be a good one.
Yeah. I don't know if it's... Are these things hollow to begin with?
I don't know. I've
Whoa.
Never
We'll leave that to
person.
The scientists and engineers to figure out. Do you have one more?
Dr. Evermore's Forever Tron would
oh,
be really
wow.
cool.
That'd be hard to enclose, but I would totally spend a night in
yeah.
the Forever Tron.
It'd be a cool environment.
Weird things might happen to you there. Natalie, thank you so much. Good ideas. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.